Well, good morning. It's Jeff Wine, host of The Car Show here on Sun Sounds Radio. Once again, we have an action-packed show for you today. We're going to catch you up on the latest and greatest of the world of the automobile. Well, folks, today is Daytona 500. We're going to talk about everything that happened this past week with regards to racing for Daytona, the different series, and the actual qualification order for today's running of the race. Got some really interesting story about Frankie Muniz. And Frankie was the star of Malcolm in the Middle, and now he's a full-time NASCAR driver. So we'll have a nice article about that. We're going to catch you up with what's going on right now with some of the things politically going on and a story about Sheryl Crow and her Tesla. I've got a great article about a Tacoma. Of course, I'm very partial to Tacoma since I have one, and this is now my fourth one, been driving them since I was in college. So of course we'll talk about gas prices, and boy are those prices going up out there. Man oh man, we got gas prices, they're cranking up the dial. Of course we'll have a little weird unusual automotive news, and we'll talk definitely about what's going on with our friends over at Car Talk. You know what to do, fasten those seat belts nice and tight. It's going to be a fast ride on The Car Show. Well, the headline reads, former child star Frankie Muniz begins life as a full-time NASCAR driver in 2025. Well, the former Malcolm in the Middle star is getting his first chance as a full-time driver in the NASCAR Truck Series that's running at Daytona this week. Well, Frankie Muniz's career has taken quite the turn. The former child star of Malcolm in the Middle, now 39 years old, is officially ready to become a full-time NASCAR driver. While acting in his first new movie, Renner, and the upcoming Malcolm reboot are in production, his focus is racing. He secured a full-time ride in the NASCAR Truck Series, which began on Friday at Daytona International Speedway. Now, when Malcolm in the Middle ended production in 2006, that first 6 months, I definitely left the business, Frankie said. In an interview with NBC while promoting the new movie Renner, I was actively denying projects. My managers and agents thought I was lying when I said, "Don't call me. I'm going race car driving." But really, over the last 20 years, I've been doing things and haven't necessarily been pursuing life as an actor. Like, I live in Arizona. I've got other businesses. I've been doing racing. I've got a band. Done a lot of things, but then I wanted to dive into racing 100%. Now, Frankie says he's lived the best of both worlds by making select NASCAR starts while balancing his career in acting and other outside work. He made 4 NASCAR Truck Series starts last year, 2 Xfinity, and also ran in the ARCA Series. Now, Muniz's limited track time last year came as he was working on a new film, and he appreciated how that worked out with Renner, and it helped him understand what he wants from his future. Fortunately, they filmed around my racing schedule, Muniz explained. When I was racing at Charlotte Motor Speedway, well, they began filming the next day when we finished the movie. Then I flew and raced in Berlin, Michigan. It just happened to work out perfect, so I'm thrilled that it did. But I realized in doing this movie, because it was so different, I really loved acting, and I realized it's something I want to get back into full-time eventually. That's the plan. But right now, I'm focused on a full-time racing career because I have the opportunity in front of me, and this is something I can't do for a long time. I'm pretty old to be in the sport, so I'm taking advantage of doing it while I can. Now, Muniz isn't unrealistic about the upcoming truck series. He knows the difficulties will come against racing against some of the world's best talent, a group of drivers that potentially have been racing most of their lives. I know this is going to be hard. The truck series is no joke. Any series in NASCAR, when you get into the trucks, everybody's good, and they're out there for their lives. This is how they're making a living. They're the best drivers in the world. So you're not just going to show up and say, oh, I can put in a half effort and go beat these guys. I know it's going to be difficult. I have a lot to learn. And there's a lot of tracks I've never been to. The other element is the team that I'm with. I've signed with them because I saw the passion of their owner to become an A-level team and becoming a winning team. Lots of other teams, if they're A-level teams, they perform like that. Same goes for the B and C-level teams. They kind of get complacent, and that's where they are. But they want to be the best team they can be, and I saw that passion, and I loved it. Then I drive for Ford, and they're bringing a lot of support to this team for the first time. So there's an improvement with the team that I'm excited to help them build. Munoz simply explained that he wants to be in the top half of the 36 field, and that would be an accomplishment for him and this new team. Anybody who's in the top 20 in points in the NASCAR Truck Series is phenomenal, and they have a chance to win races. So that's my goal, to be in the top 20. That would be a really good goal for us. Obviously, you show up with the intention to win. So I'm realistic. I know it's going to be hard, but I'm going to put the team in, and I am ready for Daytona. Last year, I just showed up every week saying, okay, I'm here to learn. I'm here to run laps. Mentally, I know I'm not going to be as competitive, but I know I belong in this series, but I'm going to prove it. So I'm showing up with Daytona with the intention to win the race. I'm showing up ready to fight and to prove everyone that I belong in that series. So Frankie Munoz says that that's what he wants to do. He wants to now race and be competitive. Well, that article was written before the race. The article that was written after the race says, Malcolm in the Middle star Frankie Munoz celebrates a strong Daytona finish. Well, sometimes when a driver finishes in 10th place, they act like it was a good day while they're stewing inside that know that they could have done better. Well, Frankie Munoz, of all people, said he wasn't acting Friday night after the 10th place finish, which was his fifth career start in the NASCAR Truck Series. The 39-year-old actor, best known for the TV show Malcolm in the Middle and the movie Agent Cody Banks, enjoyed the best finish of his racing career on the sport's biggest stage, essentially support race for the Daytona 500. Racing in one of NASCAR's top development series, Frankie crossed the finish line in 11th place. After the winner, Parker Kligerman, was disqualified for his truck not meeting the minimum post-race height, Munoz was credited with 10th place finish. Well, I couldn't ask for anything better, he told Fox Sports. This truck was so fast. Munoz drove in four races last year, and he's also run in brief appearances in other developmental series. I know I have a lot to prove to myself. Last year, I didn't really have the opportunity to do that, but this year, I do. I'm running full-time. I'm in the Ford technical meetings with other drivers, and even though we're not manufactured teammates, they're not really sure what I can do on the track. I want to earn their respect. The only way I can do that is on the track. Well, the Truck Series races include 25 races from mid-February to November, and Munoz will have a busy schedule. He's scheduled to film Malcolm in the Middle reunion series, and producers have set a production schedule where Munoz will film Sunday through Wednesday and then go to the racetrack and compete Thursday through Saturday. Well, having a good finish in his second career is likely to be a grueling schedule, but a top 10 finish for a driver with limited experience is really good. I'm happy. This was great. This was awesome. So congratulations, Frankie. Your full-time NASCAR career is off to a great start with a top 10 finish at Daytona. So we briefly talked about what happened in the Truck Series, and I was so disappointed because I'm a big Parker Kligerman fan, and Parker is actually a broadcaster for Fox Sports as well and running a very limited schedule this year after retiring from full-time racing last year. And he won on the track. He won the truck race, and I was so excited for him. But as the car/truck was brought back for post-race inspection, the truck failed inspection, and he was then disqualified, and Corey Heim became the winner of the race, which actually allowed our friend Frankie Munoz to move into the top 10. So that's what happened in the Truck Series. Now let's talk about what happened in the Xfinity Series race yesterday. Well, the headline reads, Love outruns the carnage to win the Xfinity season opener at Daytona. In a typical wild finish at Daytona International Speedway, Jesse Love won the United Rentals 300 NASCAR Xfinity Series opener in overtime while taking the white flag moments before a massive multi-car accident brought out the caution, officially ending the race. An out-of-breath Love emerged from his number two Richard Childress Racing Chevrolet roof hatch on the Daytona International Speedway infield grass to the cheers celebrating the 20-year-old Californian's second career win. So many people have helped me get to this point, Love said, who led three times for 30 laps in the evening. I'm not sure what happened to the number 21, my teammate Austin Hill, tonight. He was really dominant, but we're working on changing the culture here at RCR. We're winners. We know that. We want to win the championship for Richard Childress, and I'm ready to go to Atlanta. So, yeah, Austin Hill had a technical problem with his car. He led the most laps. So, Jesse Love wins. Sam Mayer finished in second. Sheldon Creed, who is the perennial top five finisher, but doesn't get a race. We thought he might win last night, but he didn't. Carson Quaffle finished in fourth, and Taylor Gray finished in fifth. All right, well, the running of the Daytona 500 is starting shortly, and the lineup has been set. Well, the 67th annual Daytona 500 has its starting line set, and for the first time since 2015, there are more than 40 starters. Well, Chase Briscoe and Austin Cindric will lead the field on Sunday afternoon at 1:30 Eastern Time on Fox. That's 11:30 here in Arizona. The coverage starts. Bubba Wallace will start third after winning the first qualifying race on Thursday. Eric Jones, who finished second to Austin Cindric in the second duel, will start fourth. William Byron, the defending Daytona 500 winner, will start fifth. Denny Hamlin chases his fourth Daytona 500 from the eighth starting position. Joey Logano begins his Cup Series title defense in the 10th position. So what's interesting is that this year, we have 41st starter. So we have Elio Castroneves, who is going to be starting in the 41st position. The open wheel ace, four-time winner of the Indy 500, is falling back on an open exemption provisional by NASCAR, which will expand the team to 41. The field comprises of 17 Chevys, 13 Fords, and 11 Toyotas. There are eight former winners in the Daytona 500 this year in the field. William Byron, who won it in 2024. Ricky Stenhouse Jr., who won it in 2023. Austin Cindric, who won it in 2022. Michael McDowell from Arizona won the race in 2021. Denny Hamlin won it in 2016, 2019, and 2020. Austin Dillon in 2018. Jimmy Johnson in 2006 and 13. And Joey Logano in 2015. Chandler Smith, Anthony Alfredo, BJ McLeod, and JJ Yaley were the drivers who failed to qualify for the Daytona 500. So pretty exciting. What's also interesting is the last two rows contain some of the greatest racers ever to put on a helmet. You have Martin Truex Jr., who retired from full-time racing last year, winner of championships. Jimmy Johnson, Mr. Seven-time NASCAR champion, is going to be in 40th position. Martin Truex Jr. in 39th. And Elio Castroneves, four-time winner of the Indy 500, is going to start dead last to the field. So it should be an interesting day. Look forward to catching the race, and I will have those results for you next weekend. Well, from the pages of Hemmings Magazine, the column is called The Taco Solution. Well, back on this page, I wrote a column titled The Answer is Always Miata. I think it's time to amend that thought when it comes to reliability. The Toyota Tacoma matches right up with the little Mazda Roadster. When it comes to durability and utility, the Taco takes the cake. I've gone down the rabbit hole of the Tacoma madness lately for my youngest child, who is just 14, currently enrolled in driver's ed, and has told me she wants one of the Toyota small pickup trucks as her first car. The Volkswagen Golf, driven by her brothers, is headed off to college next summer, right around the time that Sophia gets her permit. Now, Sophia might be more of a car guy herself than her brothers. She enjoys shifting themselves and is not too concerned with but aren't really concerned with cars in general. My daughter doesn't seem to be too interested in what's happening under the hood, but her questions about other cars on the road tells me that she's definitely paying attention. A freshman this year, she is on the whim of her brother, a senior, when it comes to rides from school. Alternatively is the school bus. Just some weird kids avoiding the big blue bird, especially a critical skill in surviving high school, is intact. With the precipice of getting her own permit, we've shared a lot of conversations about cars. Chatting frequently, what comes around is small pickups, and most is the littlest Toyota pickup truck. She doesn't want just any Taco. She wants a first generation built from 1995 through 2004. When it comes to compact trucks, it's definitely compact. Now, today's beefier Tacomas has a 28-inch longer wheelbase and 10 inches wider, and a foot taller, which measures nearly 40 inches long, the smallest version. It's more powerful and more capable and loaded with more creature comforts, and it's a lot more complicated, and it's 1,000 pounds heavier. Toyota hasn't offered a single cab version of this truck in decades here in the United States. Now, the beauty of the original Tacoma lies in its simplicity as an old-school frame-on truck. Straightforward powertrain options delivers incredible reliability over the years. How do I know? Well, I've never even owned one because there's an abundance of high mileage samples out there for sale. It seems that 200,000 miles is the new 100,000 miles as there are plenty of first generation Tacos with 200,000 miles plus on the odometer with still price tags in the five figure range. And I'll admit that's a bit of a sticker shock. But unless you've been living under a rock, you don't realize that there is no such thing as a cheap used Toyota these days. Besides, there is no shortage of examples that seem fully functional with 400,000 miles or more, as if they're the diesel-powered 1970 Mercedes-Benz taxis of the third world. Now, the challenge, of course, is one's realized that's finding one of these little trucks. Beyond Sophia and me, there's also a legion of diehard fans that have kept prices strong for sellers. Then there's the Toyota's unrelenting nemesis, the bug bear, otherwise world known as Rust. Ever since Toyota started assembling their trucks in the U.S. in the early 70s by installing the beds to the completed chassis in Long Beach, California, the tin worm has grown fat on Toyota steel. Hundreds of thousands of first-generation Tacomas were recalled, with Toyota buying back a bunch of them and extended the warranties against corrosion to 15 years for others. Well, that corrosive force has certainly been limited to a number of survivors, but there are still plenty that roam the roads and pass inspections year after year. Now, I'm not sure if I'll be able to find a suitable Toyota Tacoma for Sophia that fits her first car-friendly budget, but now she wants telling me she wants a pink one. Now that's not a subtle Mary Kay pink, but something brighter, something more visible from the International Space Station 250 miles above the Earth's surface. Since it's highly unlikely to find a pink Tacoma, I've suggested a wrap that might be easier and less expensive than a full refinish. She doubled down and suggested a Hello Kitty wrap. Well, she's a 14-year-old girl after all. Yeah, and I can definitely tell you that right now, Toyota Tacoma prices have stayed strong. Like I said, I am on my fourth Toyota Tacoma. It's got 182,000 miles on it. And I was telling a friend the other day, if I get less than 400,000 miles out of my Taco, I'll be disappointed in myself for not being a good owner. Well, not a normal place where I find automotive news, but automotive news is out there. This is from the pages of the New York Post. The headline reads, Sheryl Crow sells her Tesla in protest of, quote, President Musk and vows to donate the cash to NPR, National Public Radio. Well, Sheryl Crow has dramatically bid adieu to her black Tesla in protest of, quote, President Musk. The Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Sheryl Crow took to Instagram on Friday to reveal that she had sold her electric car and is donating the money to NPR, which Musk has repeatedly called to defund from his Department of Government Efficiency looks to slash federal funding. My parents always said, you are who you hang with, from Sheryl Crow, who is 63 this year. When it comes a time where you have to decide who you're willing to align yourself with, so long, Tesla. Sheryl Crow didn't seem to be heartbroken about the separation, even smiled as the tow truck drove away with her vehicle. Now, some of Crow's followers weren't thrilled with the stunt, calling her elite and accusing her of supporting wasteful government spending. The Soak Up the Sun singer didn't say how much she raked in by pawning off the Tesla, but at least the least expensive was starts at $42,000, but she promised to give the cash she got for the car to National Public Radio. Donating the money to NPR, which is under threat from Elon Musk, is hopes that the truth will continue to find its way out, adding a slew of hashtags including President Musk, President Trump, and Protect the Constitution. Musk renewed calls last week to strip National Public Radio of all its funding as his department looks to cut money across several government agencies. The media organization receives about 1% of its funding from the federal government. So Sheryl Crow stands up and says, nope, no more Tesla, and I'm giving my money to National Public Radio. All right, time for a little weird and unusual news. The headline reads, Happy Valentine's Day to this guy who just married his 1971 Ford Falcon. Well, love comes in many forms. This one just happens to be a four-door sedan. Now, we've seen our share of car-themed weddings, including vows exchanged during hot laps, one even ceremony that the couple brought their Nissans along for the photo shoot. But the one where the car is the one being betrothed, admittedly, this is a new one. Well, in Queensland, Australia, a man who was described as Brisbane's biggest car lover celebrated Valentine's this year by marrying his 1971 Ford Falcon. Giz Vujic is the husband of 30 years and a father of two children, but that didn't stop him from entering into a non-binding union with his blue Ford sedan. Now, the nuptials were coordinated by a local radio station, Triple M Brisbane's morning show, and one of the DJs presided over the ceremony. The Falcon rolled down the aisle, veil and all, and the vows were thick with automotive puns, keeping the spark alive and jumpstart were all in the same sentence. Now, according to the radio show, Volchek's obsession led him to owning three cars. Now, I don't know about you, but I owned more than three cars simultaneously at one point in my life. And as Jeff is speaking right now, I do as well. It never occurred to me to marry one of them. Not even the Miata that the ex-wife called jokingly the other woman. Still, we can appreciate his commitment a bit. Presumably, there's not going to be much more from this story outside of the fans of the local radio station having a lot of fun with the story. So yes, folks, a man in Australia marries his 1971 Ford Falcon on Valentine's Day. And as I've said before, and I'll say it again, folks, I don't make the news. I just report it. Well, from the pages of Arizona Family, the headline reads, "Why gas prices in Phoenix are up nearly 60 cents in the last month." Well, if you've noticed, gas prices have recently gone way up in Phoenix. And if you've noticed this, you're not alone. According to AAA Arizona, the average gas price is up 59 cents in the last month. So what's behind these price rises? Well, for answers, Arizona Family talked to the head of the Petroleum Analysis Group for Gas Buddy. And while it's complicated, it's a trifecta of issues, which also includes a recent refinery fire in Northern California. Well, rising demand, the change to the summer gasoline blend, and refinery maintenance, as well as outages, can be credited to the surge of these gas prices. And that's probably going to continue for the next couple weeks. Now, according to Gas Buddy, he predicted the worst may be behind for Phoenicians, but there could be another 30 to 40% gas increase in the next month or so. In the next 2 months, it's going to be an awful lot of upward pressure, not only going to be true in Arizona and in Phoenix, but possibly countrywide. Historically, gas prices usually surge in the spring and plateau in the mid to late spring. According to Gas Buddy, there's also usually a Memorial Day where they taper off. Last year, Arizona gas prices peaked in early April. Well, the reality is you can save some money if you pay attention to the car show, where we'll take you on some gas price journeys and let you know where the best gas prices are. All right, well, let's talk gas prices with our friends over at AAA. Right now, the average gas price in the United States is $3.15 a gallon. Arizona, our average gas price is $3.42. Over in New Mexico, $2.93. Colorado, $3.07. Utah, $3.05. Nevada, $3.88. California, $4.84. Head a little bit east, average gas price in Texas, $2.72. $2.72 in Oklahoma as well. All right, let's see what's going on here with our gas prices in Arizona. All right, if you're looking for cheap gas, you want to head down to Casa Grande. $2.69 at the Circle K, $2.72 at the TA Travel Center in Eloy. The fast trip is at $2.75 in Casa Grande. In Benson, Arizona, $2.75 at the Circle K as well. All right, let's see what's going on with our gas prices here in Metro Phoenix. All right, $2.85 Circle K on 89th Avenue and West Bell Road. The Circle K on Honeycutt Road in Maricopa at $2.99. The Quick Trip in Maricopa at $2.99 as well. Let's take a look. The Shell station on Southern Avenue in Phoenix, which is at 7th Avenue, is at $3.15 and the Costco at 33rd Avenue and Indian School over in West Side is also at $3.19. I got gas yesterday for $3.19 at the Walmart over in Scottsdale. So if you can find gas less than probably 3.25 in Metro Phoenix, you're going to be finding some of the best gas prices out. Well, we've reached that time, folks. Time for a little car talk. Dear Car Talk, so I recently drove my GMC Terrain through what I'm guessing is maybe 2 feet of water. Even though it was only 2 foot deep, the splash was so big that water came over the hood and the engine died. I saw white smoke, and then the engine would not restart. So I had it towed home, and it makes no sound when I try to start it now. So I'm letting it dry out. Do you think everything's going to be okay when it dries out? And that's from Luke. Well, no, I don't. You lunched it, Luke. Even though the water was only 2 feet, and that's why there are fish in the back seat, right, Luke? That could be enough to ruin the engine. Now, your car creates a wake, and so does the other nearby cars. But if the water gets high enough to reach the air intake, even for a moment, the engine could be toast. Here's what happens in water. Normally, the engine sucks in air. That air is mixed with vaporized fuel, and that mixture is compressed by the piston inside the cylinder. Then that compressed mixture is ignited, and then it expands to create the power. But, even if the air you draw into the cylinders and the pistons come up to compress everything, well, guess what? If you draw water in instead, it can't compress the water. So your pistons had a catastrophic collapse or collision with the water, and everything connected to it, like the pistons and the rods, bend or break. We call that hydrolocking. And we also have a funeral dirge music that we play in the garage when a hydrolocked car gets towed into us. So the only possible saving grace might be your insurance company. If you have comprehensive insurance on this thing, you call them and tell them what happened. Assuming it was truly not your fault, if the puddle was a surprise and there was no way to know how deep it was, then they could or should consider it an accident. Of course, if you tried to go through it with a water skier in tow, I don't think I would mention that to them. One way or another, with your money or theirs, you're going to need to get a rebuilt engine or possibly replace the entire vehicle. Good luck, and be wary of puddles from now on, Luke. Yeah, a hydrolocked car is not a good thing, and it's most likely the engine is toast. When you go through puddles, you don't go flying through them. You go through them nice and slow to make sure that you don't flood your engine out, because in that situation, this could cost Luke thousands and thousands of dollars potentially to get the engine fixed, or maybe even to have to buy a new car. Well, folks, that's all the time we have for the car show today. We'll meet you back again on the radio next Sunday, and you're listening to Sun Sounds Radio of Arizona.